classes. And let's take three deep breaths together and release all tension in the body. Let go completely. Let everything drain out. Everything dissolve and become aware of your breathing. And become aware of your whole body. Notice the rising of the abdomen on the inhalation and the falling on the exhalation. Just follow that for a few minutes. Just expanding and contracting. Expanding. Contracting. Just very simple. Focus on what is happening. Just letting it be as it is, not trying to control it. Not being involved with it in any way, just noticing it. If there's any resistance that comes up, just notice that and then let it go. Let go for now of any responsibility towards the body. It doesn't need you to support it anyway. It can breathe on its own. can support itself against the gravity of the earth. Quite a miraculous thing when we're aware of it. How it just does all these things on its own. Without us having to do anything about it. Do anything. To feed the body. The body needs food, it will find food for itself. We don't have to sleep it, make it sleep, it will sleep on its own, and wake up on its own. To make it provide for itself. All this is on autopilot. And we can just sit back and watch it. Now notice that you are aware. Let go of your attention on the body. And just notice that you are aware. And you don't have to be aware of an object. You don't have to be a subject that is aware of an object. You can just be aware. If you think you need to have an object, then just let the object be the awareness itself. So the subject and the object are the same. When awareness is just aware without an object or a subject, the eye drops away. The personal identity falls away. And the mind quiets. Awareness then is singular. Simple. Silent. Yet completely awake. Awareness is there. When the eye drops away, there's only awareness. There's no longer anyone to be aware. There's no longer a person being aware. It is just awareness. Awareness is there. In awareness, points of view will form. Stay for a while and dissolve. We call them thoughts. It is possible just to remain as awareness while these points of view come into being and go out of being, back into awareness. As a bubble forms on the surface of the ocean, stays for a while, and then pops and falls back into the ocean. It always was the ocean. Just a vivid appearance forming on or within that ocean. And The ocean never stopped being the ocean to identify with the bubble or the waves. It was always the ocean. And will always be the ocean. So too are we awareness. Always. Infinitely. Permanently. Practice is very simple. It's just to be what you are. To let go of any ideas you have about not being what you already are. Those are all untrue. All anxieties, worries, fear, stress, all of those are based on untruths. What is true can never change, can never be not true. That which is real is always real. Never stops being real, never changes. Another way to approach awareness, resting as awareness, is simply to fall in love with yourself. To be enamored with yourself. You must fall in love with yourself if you want to be free. This might sound narcissistic, but Narcissus did not fall in love with the self. He fell in love with the personal identity. Did not know the self. But we all here know what the self is. We all can make that distinction. So can you, just for now, fall in love with yourself? Can you fall in love with awareness? You just be love itself. And you can, because it is your birthright. To be able to fall in love with yourself. First thing you do when you wake up in the morning is be in love with yourself for 20 minutes every day when you wake up. If you be this every day when you wake up, it will change your day, make it brighter, make it more filled with joy and deep peace. And if you want, you can include your body as the object of your love. Ultimately, it's just love. Being in love with love. And when you fall in love with yourself, you no longer have to judge, make assessments about the world or other people. You no longer have to fear what others will think about you. You no longer have to worry about dying. All circumstances become just circumstances that don't really affect you. You begin to see them as mere appearances. When you are rooted in your self-love, you do not have to worry about becoming enlightened. Waking up. You don't have to worry about learning the correct worldview. Don't have to worry about how you're going to feed yourself or your family. Everything is taken care of. All by itself. This might seem to be an impossibility for you. And if so, I understand. I would suggest just give it a try and see what happens. What do you have to lose? to not worry about what is going on in the world or with your circumstances. They're just a tiny blip on the screen, nothing more. Do not worry about what is happening with the body. Let it do what it needs to do. And just enjoy what you are. You don't need a reason to fall in love with yourself. You don't need to think about it, about how to do it. You already know how to do it, how to be it. So just open your heart and fall head over heels in love with yourself. What does it feel like? What is the actual experience of it? be awake to that. To be in love with yourself is to know yourself completely. To know the self, not the personality, not the thoughts, but the self. Just the self. Become completely absorbed in the rapture of this knowingness. No matter what is happening in the appearances, perhaps to be lazy, to adopt the so-called lazy state that Ramana Maharshi talked about. Much easier to love yourself if you don't have anything to do. So just be lazy. Nothing to do. Nowhere to go. All things that need doing can wait. It doesn't mean stop doing things, it just means you can be lazy while doing them or not doing them. At your own pace, come back into the room. Thank you. I searched for a long time, a couple decades, find the perfect worldview that suited me. First it was Theravada Buddhism. Then it was Tibetan Mahayana Buddhism. Then it was more Zen-like Buddhism. Then it went back to different versions of Mahayana Buddhism. And Vedic traditions. Originally started out with Christianity, different versions of Christianity, or Protestantism. Then it went into different Chinese traditions, Taoism, back into Mahayana Buddhism, and into different flavors of the more meditative traditions of Tibet. And some of the American, Native American traditions, including Don Juan and different versions of Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, other Indian traditions. There are all these different ways of looking at the world, and the mind always wants to find the next best thing. The mind is constantly searching for a way to cognize the world that it projects, and it's never satisfied. It can be satisfied for a while, and then it comes up, in my experience, comes up with something to complain about. So it goes on searching for something else. So you read a book, and then you have all the answers. That's it. This is it. This is the one. And then 2 weeks later, you start to read another book, and you think, oh, wait, no, this is it. This is the one. And the next week, you watch a video of some guru talking about their worldview, and that sounds even better than the books you've read. And what I can tell you in my experience is that it's an endless game. It's a game the mind plays with itself. There's no end to it. Question is it useful for you? And for me, I would say it was both useful and completely useless. It was useful because it allowed me to stop and just be, go within and just be and discover what's there and to let go of the appearances. However, there's a lot of time that I spent on trying to figure out what was the correct, exact nuance of worldview that I believed in. And maybe I needed to go through all of that to realize that there is no true worldview. Why isn't there a true worldview? Because worldview comes from the mind. What you are is beyond the mind. Therefore, the mind can never know what you are. It can never know the ultimate truth. That's just how it is. My suggestion to anyone who wants a suggestion, who is looking for answers, is to stop looking at philosophies. Because ultimately, I mean, if you want to be a philosopher, then that's fine, be a philosopher. But don't expect to wake up from that, because you won't. If you become a philosopher, you're going in the opposite direction of waking up. Waking up requires going within and letting go of all concepts, including worldviews. So, if I were to suggest what kind of worldview you adopt, I would say let all worldviews go and discover what you are. Have your own experience of what you are, your own direct experience, which does not require any worldview. It does not require any beliefs in anything. The only thing it requires is a willingness to let go of the appearances, to let go of all of the systems of belief and thinking that you were brought up with, which might take courage. But it's entirely possible and entirely up to you. When you begin to discover what you really are, there are no words for it. You might come up with words like emptiness or bliss, pure love, grace, ecstasy, liberation, moksha, Ananda. But those are all just labels hanging on pure emptiness. These are all just facsimiles of the real thing. I would suggest that the more you let go of wanting to find answers with your intellect, The faster you let go of that, the faster you will discover what you are. Please don't make a lifetime out of it, like I almost did. Or do what you like, but that's my recommendation anyway. Any comments or questions?
Probably a lot.
What's that?
Probably quite a few, but I'm not sure where to start, so maybe I'll mull it. I know, I'm going to mull it over, and I've just got these thoughts jangling around. Better spit them out. So, I mean, I was fascinated to hear your long list of, you know, all of the traditions and everything you've explored, but you must have got to a point where you're just like almost to the verge of being so done with it, so crazy. Just, and then you came across self-inquiry. I just would be interested in that last bit.
Yeah. It wasn't just a sudden thing. It was something that I was exposed to maybe probably 15 years ago or more. Self-inquiry is very similar to the traditions that I studied in have aspects of self-inquiry that are not called that, but they're basically that. Self-inquiry is something that is what we refer to in Advaita Vedanta. That's as a practice of the traditions of Vedanta or Advaita Vedanta or different kinds of Vedanta. But self-inquiry can be found in all the traditions of meditation. All the Eastern traditions. They just come in different forms and are spoken about in different ways. So even Lester Levinson talked about self-inquiry. In fact, he used some of the exact words that Ramana Maharshi did. It had been knocking on my door for a long time, just eventually woke up to it.
Okay.
So it wasn't like I just suddenly found it and then that was it. Mm. Yeah, it was a lot of letting go of stuff that I had to let go of over the years. Kind of clean out and go through what I had to go through, and maybe that was all part of the plan anyway, you know. So if I were to consciously do it over again, I would just let go of all of these traditions and just go within and just explore that, because that's where it's at. It's not in the traditions.
Mm-hmm.
It's in this. It's in yourself,
mm-hmm.
inside yourself. And I just I just latched on to different traditions, wanting it to be the answer, and it never was.
Mm-hmm.
It was, and in a way, it was pointing me to go in, but I wasn't willing to fully go in, inward.
Mm-hmm.
I was latching on to the
mm-hmm.
to the rituals and the language.
And the belief that, like,
the
knowledge is, like, something great, you know?
Huh?
The belief that knowledge, where we're taught that knowledge is a great thing.
Yeah.
To aspire to.
Yeah,
you know?
Intellectual knowledge, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's one thing that was a huge obstacle for me, because the Gaelic tradition that I studied of Tibetan Buddhism is all about intellectual knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it just became exhausting after a while, because it never ended. You know, I went through all the sutra teachings, and then I went through all the tantra teachings. And the whole way I thought, oh, there's going to be an end to this, you know. There never was an end to it. It's still more learning, more intellectual learning. Yeah, so maybe that helped some people, but never really helped me. Or maybe it helped me just to get over that, to go through it, and just to see it for what it was, having gone through it. Of course, it makes you really, you know, it made me a lot more able to argue. debate about beliefs and worldviews and traditions of beliefs, you know, spiritual traditions, and what is the world, what is reality, and all things like that. I was more able to talk about it, but it didn't mean that I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mean that I was like content with myself.
And you had a great, like, logical understanding of it all, but not any direct
exactly
experience.
Yeah,
or maybe some,
yeah, I had some direct experiences, but yeah, it's different. You can just learn and learn and learn and read and read and get nowhere.
Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of Ramana Maharshi. It's just such, it's pure simplicity, isn't it? And he even says that he didn't really like to teach with words, did he? Just in,
yeah,
by his silence was like,
yeah,
the teaching.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I really appreciate that about him. I think he's still teaching us silently.
Mm.
Just not embodied in a body.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions, comments? So, see you hopefully next week. Have a good week. 20 minutes in the morning, that's my recommendation.
Mm-hmm. We do it for a day.
Huh?
I do it for a day.
You already do it.
20 minutes.
You already do it. You're doing it already.
Yeah.
For 20 minutes.
Every day.
Fantastic. Wow. How did that happen?
Yeah.